Hey, James Corbett here. Do you remember back in the year 999 when Pope Sylvester II, yes, real name, look it up, predicted the beginning of the end of the world in the year 1000? What a fruitcake! And do you remember back in the 16th century when English witch Mother Shipton predicted the world to an end will come in 1881? What a loon! And do you remember all those Mayan calendar aficionados who tried to convince us that the world was coming to an end in 2012 and we were going to be shunted off into some alternate reality where Donald Trump was going to be president and billionaire tech overlords were going to be trying to shove brain chips in our brain? Okay, well, that one might be true. But you know what I mean. The world is always ending, according to someone or other. And, of course, every single one of those end-of-the-world predictions throughout the entire course of human history has been wrong. But people keep making them. And more to the point, people keep listening. But why? Today, we are going to explore what compels people to constantly predict the end of the world, what compels other people to listen to those predictions, and what this whole process can teach us about the world we're living in with the help of Peter Thiel and the Antichrist. Brock, hit the theme!
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another edition of The Corbett Report. I'm your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in July of 2025 with episode 481 of The Corbett Report podcast, Antichrist or Armageddon? And yes, as you may have observed, if you've been around in the independent media space, let alone in the world generally, over certainly the past couple of decades, people love predicting the end of the world, apocalypse, Armageddon, various tales of doom and woe and catastrophe. And if you haven't, if you've somehow managed to avoid all of those predictions, well, I certainly have seen my share in the 18 years that I've been doing the Corbett Report, and I've documented some of them along the way. Does anyone remember, for example, Operation Blackjack? Does anyone remember the Shemitah? Have you heard of the latest? Apparently there was some Japanese manga from the 1990s that was predicting July 5th, 2025 will be the date of some cataclysmic earthquake slash tsunami event that's going to devastate Japan. Well, I am on the edge of my seat, quite literally here in Japan. I will let you know if Japan, I don't know, explodes in the next couple of days. I will be here to report on it for you. But if you have somehow managed to miss all of those predictions, well, I am going to be putting together an informative editorial for an upcoming subscriber newsletter, specifically on some of these predictions of the end of the world and how they did or did not come to pass and what they really mean. So if you're interested in that and you are not yet a Corbett Report paying subscribed member, why not think about it? I would invite you to go to CorbettReport.com and become a member. Obviously, I need your support to continue doing this work, and well, you get a subscriber newsletter out of the deal. Of course, the editorial will always be available for free on Substack.com if you're interested. But at any rate, I would appreciate that support. And you will be able to read all about these various end-of-the-world predictions that have swirled around in the independent media space for the past couple of decades. But, of course, the phenomenon of predicting the end of the world goes back much farther than that. Not just years, not just decades, not just centuries, but millennia. And I say that advisedly, because we can take that, for example, from a list like List of Dates Predicted for Apocalyptic Events from none other than the bastion of truthiness, Wikipedia, which starts by noting that predictions of apocalyptic events that will result in the extinction of humanity, a collapse of civilization, or the destruction of the planet have been made since at least the beginning of the Common Era. And they go on to provide that list of dozens and dozens and dozens, ultimately hundreds of predictions that have been made about the end of the world, all the way from, well, this list starts in the year 66, they say CE, I'll be old school and say AD, when the Jewish Essene sect of ascetics was predicting the arrival of the Messiah as a result of the Jewish uprising against the Romans in Judea in 66 to 70. But from that point on, there have been no shortage of predictions, some of them quite precise and mathematical about their prediction of the date and time of the end of the world. For example, who could forget October 19th, 1533, when Michael Stifel predicted, a mathematician calculated that Judgment Day would begin at 8 a.m. on that day. Mark it on your calendar, folks. Take it to the bank. And there are many, many, many more predictions that have been made since then, including the one that I started off talking today about, the Pope Sylvester II prediction that the 1st of January 1000 AD would mark the beginning of the millennium. And as a result of that prediction, riots are said to have occurred in Europe and pilgrims headed east to Jerusalem. Many historians, however, dispute that any of these events ever took place. And yes, if you do follow these footnotes back through to the source links of this information, like I did, you too will discover that, yeah, this there's very, very scant evidence that this was ever, this prediction was ever made, that any riots ever took place, that there was ever sort of mass panic around the year 1000. But anyway, it certainly is in the zeitgeist, and it does refer back to even older predictions of doom. What is millennium? What is this referring to? What is millennialism? What does all of this go back to? Well, as you can see, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of such predictions that have been made, and I invite you to explore this list at your own leisure for the purpose of coming to a better understanding of the fact that, yes, this is not a one-off occurrence that happens now and then. This happens over and over and over. Someone comes along with a startling prediction, sometimes with a date and time on which Judgment Day will begin. The end of the world will take place. And you know what? Throughout these thousands of years of predictions, every single one of them has been wrong. Startlingly wrong. Demonstrably false. And yet people continue to make these types of drastic predictions, and people still continue to listen to them. Why is that? Why does this particular story of the end of all life, why does it have such resonance down from the beginnings of recorded history all the way through to the present day? Well, I think in order to better understand that question, we're going to have to go to the granddaddy of all of these stories, the one that started it all, the one that coined the term Armageddon itself.
And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue, Armageddon. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, It is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great.
Exciting stuff, isn't it? And I can already hear all of the Corbett Report commenters out there salivating at the chops. Oh my God, finally, we can have a religious flame war on topic for once and talk about whatever, biblical prophecy or whatever people want to talk about. And it will actually be related to what James is talking about for the first time. Imagine that. Well, that is precisely why, if you want to comment on this, you got to go to CorbettReport.com, because you cannot comment on any of the video sharing platforms where I am posting this. So, Corbett Report members, please log in right now. Don't even watch the episode. Just start having your religious flame war in peace. Yay. But as I say, exciting stuff, isn't it? And clearly, obviously, the type of thing that has led to many, many thousands of years of history of people talking about the end of the world and imagining how that will take place and looking for the signs that it is taking place, etc., etc. Okay, all right, interesting, but what does this have to do with the New World Order or the price of tea in China, James? Well, let's examine an interesting invocation of this Armageddon that came up recently in a conversation in the place you would least expect it, because there is something about the nature of these types of predictions and the nature of the way that they will unfold as perhaps self-fulfilling prophecies that I have struggled to get across to the audience over the many years that I've been talking about such ideas and events. But it was recently raised in an intriguing way by none other than Peter Thiel.
There's also a very macroscopic question that you're interested in that, you know, we'll pull on the religion thread a little bit here. You have been giving talks recently about the concept of the Antichrist, which is a Christian concept, an apocalyptic concept. What does that mean to you? What is the Antichrist?
How much time do we have?
We've got as much time as you have to talk about the Antichrist.
All right. Well, I could talk about it for a long time.
I think
there's always a question. How do we articulate, some of these existential risks, some of the challenges we have, and they're all framed in this sort of runaway dystopian science text. So there's a risk of nuclear war. There's a risk of environmental disaster, maybe something specific like climate change, although there are lots of other ones we could come up with. There's a risk of, bioweapons. You have all the different sci-fi scenarios. Obviously, there are certain types of risks with AI. But I always think that if we're going to have this frame of talking about existential risks, perhaps we should also talk about the risk of another type of a bad singularity, which I would describe as the one-world totalitarian state, because I would say the political solution, the default political solution people have for all these existential risks is one-world governance. You know, what do you do about nuclear weapons? We have a United Nations with real teeth that controls them, and they're controlled by an international political order. And then something like this, is also, what do we do about AI? And we need global compute governance. We need, a one world government to control all the computers, log every single keystroke to make sure people don't program, a dangerous AI. And I've been wondering whether that's sort of a, going from, the frying pan into the fire. And so the atheist philosophical framing is one world or none. That was a short film that was put out by the Federation of American Scientists in the late 40s. Starts with a nuclear bomb blowing up the world. And obviously you need a one world government to stop it. One world or none. And the Christian framing, which in some ways is the same question, is Antichrist or Armageddon. You have the one world state of the Antichrist, or we're sleepwalking towards Armageddon. One world or none, Antichrist or Armageddon, on one level are the same question. Now, I have a lot of thoughts on this topic, but sort of one question is, and this was a plot hole in all these Antichrist books people wrote, how does the Antichrist take over the world? It's he gives these demonic, hypnotic speeches and people just fall for it. And so it's this plot hole. It's this demonium.
Right. It's implausible.
It's a very implausible plot hole.
Right.
But I think we have an answer to this plot hole. The way the Antichrist would take over the world is you talk about Armageddon nonstop. You talk about existential risk nonstop. And this is what you need to regulate. It's the opposite of the picture of Baconian science from the 17th, 18th century, where, the Antichrist is like some evil tech genius, evil scientist who invents this machine to take over the world. People are way too scared for that. In our world, the thing that has political resonance is the opposite. The thing that has political resonance is we need to stop science. We need to just say stop to this. And this is where, in the 17th century, I can imagine a Dr. Strangelove, Edward Teller type person taking over the world. In our world, it's far more likely to be Greta Thunberg.
Okay, I want to suggest a middle ground between those two options. It used to be that the reasonable fear of the Antichrist was a kind of wizard of technology. And now the reasonable fear is someone who promises to control technology, make it safe, and sort of usher in what, from your point of view, would be a kind of universal stagnation, right?
Well, that's more my description of how it would happen.
Right.
So I think people still have a fear of a 17th century Antichrist.
Yes.
We're still scared of Dr. Strangelove.
Right. But you're saying the real Antichrist would play on that fear and say, you must come with me to avoid Skynet, to avoid the Terminator, to avoid nuclear Armageddon.
Yes.
Intriguing stuff, but particularly intriguing because this is Peter Thiel who is saying this. You know Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel as in the founder of Palantir, the co-founder of PayPal, the first angel investor in Facebook, the billionaire who sits on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. You know all about Peter Thiel because you have read my three-part series on the strange story of Peter Thiel. But if not, well, then I have some reading for you, and I will put the links to those three parts of the strange story of Peter Thiel in the show notes so you can explore them at your leisure. But yes, that Peter Thiel is the one who is now talking about this Antichrist or Armageddon phenomenon and how it is being used to steer us towards world government and AI and all of this soupy mess of existential threats in which we are swimming. He is invoking them all. Very intriguing. So I guess there are two questions that we can answer today. One, what precisely is Thiel saying here about Antichrist versus Armageddon? And two, why is he saying this? Well, I have some thoughts on question number two, but let's tackle question number one first. So I think his basic argument here can boil down into three steps. Step number one, the public is so afraid of Armageddon, this coming apocalypse, that two, they clamor for peace and security from three, the Antichrist, who comes along to offer that security in the form of world government. All right, it's a fairly simple 1-2-3 step process that I think, as Thiel correctly points out, is underlying the psychology of, or at least playing on the psychology of, people who are obviously hardwired, biologically, psychologically, whatever the case, hardwired to look for threats and find ways to mitigate those threats. That is clearly how we have survived as a species as long as we have. But also, I think our conception of Armageddon, as, again, Thiel correctly points out, has changed over the years, specifically over the decades. The concept of a worldwide apocalyptic calamity, this great battle that will take place as the forces of the world line up at Armageddon, is something that has obviously captured people's imagination for thousands of years. But the real palpable, feasible, thinkable, tangible, worldwide extinction-level event threat has really only been on the table since the splitting of the atom and the unleashing of the nuclear genie, to use the hyperbolic language of the 1950s Atoms for Peace-style propaganda reels. Or should that be the 1940s propaganda reels? Because yes, as Thiel, once again, I will note, correctly notes, it was literally the very year after the end of World War II, and of course the spectacular events at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, in 1946 that the Federation of Atomic Scientists, Federation of American Scientists, they changed their name at some point. Anyway, the FAS started warning about this Armageddon-type scenario and proposing the Antichrist of a world system of atomic control. That is to say, a world government of some sort, with some sort of teeth, presumably, to enforce that atomic control. And they literally called this one world or none, as in, we will become one world, or we will blow up the world, essentially, is what they were saying. And this particular screed took the form of both a book, which is freely available online. I will provide the link to the PDF and the archive.org versions, and you can read through it at your leisure when the contributions by such luminaries as Niels Bohr and Robert Oppenheimer and Albert Einstein and Walter Lippmann and others talking about various aspects of this nuclear genie that was coming out of the bottle at that time. But for our purposes today, perhaps this can most readily be digested in the form of the handy-dandy aforementioned 1940s propaganda reel, which is available and has been preserved by the Library of Congress and others in pristine, high-definition quality. So let's just take a look at a clip from that 1946 propaganda reel on One World or None.
One atomic bomb did this to a city and its people. Most ruthless aggressors of the past had no such weapon. The soldier of Alexander with one spear killed one. Napoleon's cannon in one firing killed 12. The Kaiser's Big Bertha killed 88. Hitler's V2 killed 168. Japan's war against the United States ended after a B-29 dropped one atomic bomb that killed close to 100,000. It is therefore an imperative necessity that all the nations of the world unite to avert catastrophe. The United Nations must establish a worldwide control of atomic energy and of other weapons of mass destruction. Representatives of the peoples of the world must together make laws which will abolish war, laws which will hold the individual in all lands responsible for crime against world peace. Only through proper control of atomic energy can we answer the question how this great force may be used for the benefit of mankind. Atomic energy, freed from the menace of war, can be for all people in all nations the great fusing force of one world. The choice is clear. It is life or death.
Can anyone out there confirm, is that Peter Lorre narrating that particular propaganda reel? I don't know who it is, but boy, am I stirred by that speech. Yes, yes, we can create a one world government to protect us from the atom or whatever. Ridiculous, I suppose, in hindsight, but can we say, as ridiculous and ham-handed as that 1940s propaganda is, can we say that the propaganda of our age is totally different? Is it a difference in kind or merely a difference in degree? At any rate, the nuclear apocalypse fears certainly did motivate people for many, many decades. In the shadow of the atom bomb there in the 1940s, all the way through the Cold War and beyond, I mean, again, we've seen the specter raised just recently with the whole Iranian nuclear program. What is all of this Trump bombs Iran about? It is about the specter of the atom bomb, and we can't let the Muslims get it, except the Pakistanis. Anyway, whatever, which we gave it to them. But hey, who looks? Don't look into that history. But of course, it's only one of the cards in the deck of Armageddon, right? And as undoubtedly as an entire generation or generations of minds were shaped by that fear of all-out atomic war and the end of the world that way, there are a number of other existential threats to the planet that have arisen in recent decades to perhaps steal the thunder from the nuke apocalypse idea. I mean, for example, of course, we've heard already the invocation of Greta Thunberg. Yes, the climate emergency. How dare you? How absolutely dare you not do everything about this looming threat to the planet? We've been hearing that for many decades, and I have certainly talked about the environmental movement and how it has been hijacked and used as one of these Armageddon threats that we are supposed to have this great climate anxiety about, and people are not even having children because they think about the planet, etc., etc. But that's not the only one. I mean, obviously there's the pandemic pandemonium, because you thought COVID was something. Wait until you see Pandemic 2. Right? Bill Gates, who continues to stump speech for that. I still remember when he was writing about Pandemic 2 as if it was World War II, back a few years ago. But I just looked it up and he's still talking about it this year. The next one's going to get us in the next 4 years, he says, as if he has an inside track on what bioweapons may or may not be in the offing. But there you go. Even the concept and the threat of the bioweapons is another card in the deck of Judgment Day. Or, hey, how about Judgment Day, as in Terminator 2 Judgment Day? Of course, the AI takeover. Think about what Judgment Day actually was in the Terminator franchise lore. It was, of course, a nuclear apocalypse that was unleashed by the AI that took over everything. So a War Games type scenario, if you will. Yes, perhaps if there is a distinctly and exclusively 21st century type of concern for this end of the world. Maybe it's something, some sort of amalgamation of AI and nuclear apocalypse and war and drones and whatever else that is keeping people up at night and willing, clamoring for the security of world government, right? That's the type of thing that people are perhaps reasonably, worried about in this day and age, including people like, Peter Thiel.
There are dimensions of AI that are, potentially violent and very dangerous. And you don't have to necessarily believe all these sort of weird pictures where it's this super intelligence that's somehow completely disembodied and is going to kill every last human being on the planet. But there are natural ways to combine it with weapons technology that feel
unsettling.
And just a simple example is that we have this drone technology. That's again a new form of technology that's come to the fore in the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, and you have a human in the loop, but the human can get jammed, and so the natural fix is to put AI on the drones and turn these into more autonomous weapon systems. And that seems inevitable. That seems like the natural, logical thing to do. And then even I, as a pro-tech person, have to say I find that somewhat unsettling.
Hold on a second. What did we just witness there? I mean, let me get this straight. Peter Thiel is unsettled by the concept of autonomous weapons systems. Let me get this straight. This is Peter Thiel, the founder of Palantir, which, let me check my notes. Oh, that's right, is partnering with companies like Anduril and other Thielversian minion companies to, let me check my notes again, create autonomous weapons in Ukraine and elsewhere. All right. Okay, cool. There's something that doesn't quite add up about that. I mean, that is a weird and long way, roundabout way of calling yourself the Antichrist, but here we are. Peter Thiel is the Antichrist confirmed. So what is he saying? What is he saying exactly? We should be concerned about the people who will play on the fear of Armageddon, because they will use it to impose their false order on the planet. But also, we should be concerned about the things that Peter Thiel is doing, although he speaks of it as if it's a third-person thing that he's not involved with, that will create the threat that will presumably be used to justify the, well, won't somebody do about it? Okay, anyway, as I say, kind of interesting that, I mean, what is this, revelation of the method or something else entirely? I will leave that for you to ponder, and of course, please do leave your comments in the comment section at CorbettReport.com. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that particular pretzel knot that Thiel seems to have twisted himself into. But nonetheless, I think there is something profound and important about about the way these concepts are balling up. Antichrist or Armageddon, one world or none, is clearly a tool of psychological manipulative, if not control, at least herding people towards a false solution, which can then be proffered as, hey, here is what you guys need. I mean, this in some ways is, of course, the very, very well-known problem-reaction-solution that I have discussed in many of its different aspects over the years. But I think this touches on something that, as I say, I've attempted to articulate in the past, I don't think people understand. You have heard this before under the guise of, you know, if fascism comes to the shores of the United States, it'll come dressed in the American flag, as in counteracting the old concerns of people that, oh, well, you know, at least we'd know the Nazis if they dressed up as Nazis and marched on the streets. Well, okay, yes, but what if they cloaked themselves in the American flag? And we're talking about patriotism. It won't look like the thing you expect it to look like, so you will not know to be wary of it. And in the exact same way, I think when and if world government arrives on the scene, many of the people, even people I imagine who are in my own audience, will be clamoring for it by the time it gets here, because it will be the thing that will save us from the existential threat, or at least that's the way it will be dangled out in front of people to get them to accept it. Create the threat to the world order that can only be addressed by everyone coming together under one banner, under Antichrist, under world government, however you want to frame it. And I have seen this phenomenon playing out over and over and over again throughout my time, again, doing the work that I do. Yes, people point out quite rightly about some of the very real worries and dangers of things like nuclear warfare or AI or bioweapons or genetic modification or name your existential threat to the planet. Sure, but the dot, 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 the implied part of that, sometimes quite explicit, but sometimes implied, is that we need some strong ruler to come in and stop that, to stop that thing. We need some strong ruler to come in and say no more of this thing. And it's generally some sort of scientific process that's going on anyway that will presumably continue to go on no matter who steps in and says what, and has been going on for decades or generations, like genetic modification technology, like the AI research that is going on apace at the moment. And, you know, rulers might come in, rulers, would-be rulers of humanity might come in to promise to save you from that thing. I'm suspicious that that ever will happen. But even so, even if they do provide you the security from that thing, the implication of that is world government. And that is what actually Peter Thiel is quite rightly pointing out to with regards to one world or none. Yes, oh, we all must come together to constrain this atomic energy and may use it for good purposes, not bad purposes. And how do we do that? We come together as one world in a one world control system where there will be this watchdog of nuclear power. And that sounds wonderful, but the devil, as always, is in the details. And how do we arrive at that point other than by subsuming our individual, let alone national, sovereignty into the world collective that will be ruled over by some benevolent person who just wants to protect us from nuclear annihilation, guys. So there were a number of things, lessons that can be learned from what we have teased out today, one of which has to be stop devoting your entire existence and obsessing over the end of the world and the various end of the world type scenarios that are dangled in front of you over and over. In fact, in some ways, are they being trumpeted even by the independent media and elsewhere, being trumpeted and put in your face over and over and over? The world is ending, the world is ending, the world is ending, the world is ending, because inevitably that drives people into the arms of some antichrist or other, as in some politician or someone promising to save you from that bad thing. And the more time we spend obsessing over the end of the world, the less time we spend building the world we actually want, spending our time and our energy, our limited resources on this planet, both in terms of the resources we have at our disposal, also the ultimate resource of time. We end up spending all of that obsessing over these existential threats that may or may not come in the future, rather than working together to build the world that we want. Every second that we spend worrying about the AI, nuclear, biochemical, climate catastrophe apocalypse is our seconds that we are not spent in actual productive time on this planet doing things that we want. That is why they, them, those, whoever is in charge of this agenda, or at the very least who just wants to assume power on the back of some scare story or other, never wants you to think about your power, your actual power in doing things in the real world. They want you glued to the screen watching the next installment of The End of the World and obsessing about that. So the real rebels in the world are not the people who are glued to their screen and thinking of the 18 different ways that they're under attack by the New World Order or whatever. No, the real rebels are the people who are out there taking action in the real world, cooperating with others, the people who are tilling the soil in their community garden or starting some sort of local exchange trading system or out playing with their children or working a soup line at the local volunteer center or whatever it is. Those are the people who are actually the rebels in the system and who are not playing into the hands of those who want you glued to the screen, worrying about the next existential threat to humanity. So if the question is Antichrist or Armageddon, how about no? How about there's a third way? Activation, I don't know, pick another A word, but something along those lines. Go outside, touch grass. If you want to watch something, make it Solutions Watch. I don't know, this is my humble suggestion. Anyway, that's what I think. Again, not that I am one to quote FDR on anything, but the only thing we have to fear is fear itself is a well-known phrase because it is very apt. Yes, of course, there are things to worry about in this world, and there are threats that are looming on the horizon, some very large threats. But our time is better spent actively building the world that we want rather than worrying about the world that we don't want. Prepare yourself, surely, for whatever you can prepare yourself for whatever is coming in the ways that you can. But don't lose sight of the world around you, the people around you, the community that you are either contributing to and building up or letting go to rot because you're too busy worrying about the nuclear apocalypse or what have you. Anyway, those are my humble thoughts. I'm sure you have your own thoughts on these matters. And so have at it, folks. I'm sure there are already a couple of hundred comments in the religious flame war that I'm sure will take place in the comment section for this post. But anyway, if you go to CorbettReport.com, you can leave your thoughts in the comment section. I'm looking forward to hearing them. And let's start examining the methods and madness of someone like Peter Thiel bringing this topic to the table and seemingly pointing at others when it seems like all his fingers are pointing back at himself. Anyway, that's going to do it for our exploration here today. As I say, I will have more to say about some of these end of the world predictions coming up in the subscriber newsletter at CorbettReport.com, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, and in between time, I am James Corbett, thanking you for investing your time in today's exploration. Looking forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Mr. Thiel, do you have any comments about Palantir's surveillance of the American people, sir? Or any of your connections to Jeffrey Epstein? I think people are rather concerned about that last particular one.
Your
they're setting up a Big Brother surveillance system, and people know it, sir. You think the American people want this surveillance tech being used against them? Any comments at all on the Epstein connections? You were meeting with them. People are waking up to what you're doing there, sir. That's why we're here covering this.
Peter Thiel was booking it. That man picked up the pace. The second the word Epstein came out, it seemed he started getting a little faster. But stone cold Peter Thiel. Of course, co-founded Palantir with Alex Karp, who is still here. And these are the guys who are setting up the Big Brother surveillance system, essentially to track, trace, and database everyone. Not just Americans, you may have heard me say that, but literally everyone. And that's a big reason of, part of the reason why he is here. There is a lot of heavy kind of tech representation here and military men who are preparing for something. So,
Peter Thiel in the house.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett. Reportage. Essays on the New World Order. Available where books are sold. Until they're not.
ReportageBook.com.